Okay, we're going to start. One quick question by a show of hands. Who was not here before the break?
All right.
One person. Good. So we will fly through the background. Okay. Or skip. That's hard to do. Okay. Judges. No, no,
no. No, you want to say something.
What? I'm supposed to say something? Okay.
That was yesterday, Monday.
Right, so three teams, as you heard, participated in the interactive session on Monday. We've already mentioned, we've already talked about this. Okay, so. All right, so this is the mini session, as was pointed out, started the interactive session 6 p.m. till all hours for some of us. It was a mini problem reduced down to three. The teams attempted to also solve that and ideally potentially the grand challenge with real analysts. And we're going to show you some pictures. Laura was our photographer, and so these are pictures of the teams and the individuals. Here are Mark and Jeremy working hard, fixing problems, you know, with a data set on real live. Oops. And this is one of the teams.
Getting ready.
Getting ready. Smiling. Now with an analyst, you can see they're starting to be a little more serious. Cup of coffee needed. This is late at night. Okay, intense smiling. We discovered something good. It looks like we might make it.
And when one of us taking notes.
Yes. All right, intensely pointing at screens. Everybody squeezing in. Okay, very relaxed here. This good picture of everybody. Somebody very detailed taking notes. Each team had a note taker that transcribed everything to give it back to the team. So very useful protocol and feedback for the activity. Okay, more of that. Intense discussions with behind the scenes people.
Backups.
Backups, you know. Am I doing this right? You know, okay. You can, the hands on the mouth were really telling us a lot. There's something going on here. There were a lot of those. This is a subset of the pictures, but
here we go. Yeah, what is
so
this?
If you could analyze, if you look at your analyst and the analyst has their hands on their mouth, you need to make a note that your software is lacking something.
No, they're looking at the data. You know.
Yes. A lot of hand motion all the way through, lots of exciting, you know, events. This is centered around the analyst, so this is really what we wanted, the teams to get feedback with the analysts, okay? Okay. Definitely got something there. I don't know if this was falling asleep or the blink. The camera was very, very slow.
The satisfaction.
Could be satisfaction. I got it. This is it. You know, Nirvana or Save the Shire. What? Okay. I don't know what's going on here. Next year, I'll put captions on these here. This was our host from Battelle here who provided food and support for the activity. Okay. And of course, there was an extreme participant there watching and a small one, very afraid. So, the panelists are Don Pellegrino from Drexel Nevac, Annie Tat from Oculus. No, I changed that. Sorry. Sorry, Lin Chan from Oculus. I know what happened. There are two slides here in this presentation. I changed one and the wrong one. And they'll have 10 minutes each to explain their system, several minutes for questions to each panelist that they can respond to the committee's questions or they can respond to the audience, whichever ways, and lots of open question time for you to ask all kinds of questions. So I think we're all set.
Yeah, but just to clarify, what they will present is really their system using the main challenge data set that we gave and is out that you could use too and that we summarized in the previous session, not the little one that we used today before. All right, Nivak. What number?
Five. Okay, sorry.
right, so I'm Don Pellegrino. I'm with the Northeast Visualization Analytics Center. So this is a collaboration between Penn State's GeoVista Center, the MINDS Group, and Drexel University's College of Information Science and Technology. We benefited from a very large and diverse team. Oh, thanks. With myself, Cheechin Pan, Anthony Robinson, Michael Stryker, Junyun Liu, Chris Weaver, Prasenjit Mitra, Xiaomei Chen, Ian Turton, and Alan McEachran. So this was great. The team composition really played a lot into how we went through the process and how we organized the work. There was a lot of benefit from having the collaboration between multiple departments, the Department of Geography at Penn State and the College of Information Science and Technology at Drexel. And I think that this slide here probably is the core of what we did. So I'll talk about the rest of the stuff, but this was the important one. Now, I was supposed to introduce a system, but we don't really have one single tool that gave us all the magical answers. It was very much a process of aggregating data across every way that we could get at the data. I list MS Office over in the corner, and maybe that's one extreme. Then at the other extreme, we utilize Chris Weaver's improvised tool very heavily. And that was it's a very sophisticated multiple coordinated views development environment, if you're not familiar with Chris's work. And as a development environment, it doesn't work directly on the data, but you use it to customize specific visualizations that are tailored towards a specific data structure and analytical task. So we see here that we addressed each mini challenge with a customized improvised visualization that allowed us to get at that particular data set. Also on the right, you'll see that we sort of separated the data based on structured data, unstructured data. Oh, thanks. Now I can look directly at you. As well as the image data. So the improvised tools worked primarily with the structured and some of the image data. And then for the unstructured data, we took additional approaches and tried to synergize all of this as we went through the process, which I'll walk you through today. So this gives you a sense of one of the customized improvised systems that was built specifically to explore the Wikidata. So this was designed to support the discovery process. And the way the team was organized is individual members sort of went at the many challenges that they had an interest in, and they used this system to explore and get comfortable with the data. What they would do is use the multiple coordinated views to filter particular aspects of the data, come up with new ideas to pursue or new leads, and then use this to evaluate the substance of those leads. It was mentioned in the earlier talk that the Wiki data set sort of came out of previous papers from this conference, and we were able to leverage the work by Brandes and Lerner that was published in Information Visualization, and they did an algorithm for the analysis of controversy. So by using this, which is more of a classical numeric approach, this helped provide ideas that then fed back into the interactive discovery that was going on with the specific tools. And this sort of interaction was fairly typical of how the ideas developed within one data set and then across the team. This is another example. This is the visualization that was developed to explore the interdiction data, so boat.viz. And we see here it incorporates geospatial data along with filtering and temporal aspects. The lower left-hand corner shows temporal values, and the center pane is going to be the map where animations and filtering allow you to explore for patterns within the data. So this one was done for the RFID tags. And we see in the center pane the geospatial representation. And this went along with an animation that went through the time sequence and allowed you really to evaluate movement. We see some additional derived views on the right-hand side to assess movement data, and on the left-hand side, abilities to filter by particular persons of interest. So again, in entering this data set, using the tool allowed people to first get an overall sense of the data, and then to follow in specifically on whatever hypotheses or specific leads they wanted to follow up on. So unfortunately, we have to skip the video due to a little bit of a technical issue. So as I mentioned, the team sort of split up and worked on the mini challenges individually. And the real challenge for the grand component was to integrate the information and get everybody working together. Eventually, the team sort of coalesced with particular members taking ownership of the mini challenges. And we had a biweekly conference call set up just to get the whole team together and share information. And we used a wiki instance to have people report their ideas and get the ideas out of their head and externalize somewhere. The wiki was done purposefully to mimic the IntelliPedia environment. It's not very sophisticated. It was just a bland wiki instance. And certainly there's nothing novel about setting up a conference call or using screen sharing technology to do discussion. But it was very revealing in terms of how ideas actually went through one member working on one mini challenge and then were expressed to the group. Often during these conference calls, people would sort of brainstorm, and this would create new leads or new ideas that somebody could go back to a mini challenge and then follow up with. Again, this is a very traditional model, but it's worth being reflective about as we sit and think about new ways to support this kind of endeavor. So on the last point, the mini challenges had more specific or direct questions that allowed us to enter the data with maybe a hint or a starting point and explore from there out. And then these were used to drive the whole investigation. So again, reflecting back, we had a starting point, which was very helpful and really affected the rest of the analysis. Slide's a little busy, but bear with me. The point we're trying to make here is that we tried to focus around what the analyst and the exploratory process needed to move forward. So you see here that the particular improvised visualizations were key, and the analyst could enter those to explore specific data sets. And within this model, I've represented the structured data that was actually provided by the contest team, which each structured data component being addressed specifically by these customized tools. So this contrasts with maybe a more generalized approach where you would aim to have a single tool for all cases. Having said that, it was the improvised back end that gave us the flexibility to dynamically create these custom tools quickly and also to modify them. So we weren't necessarily tied to specific widgets or specific visualization components. I think it would be better said that we could utilize the atomic visualization elements that have been developed over time and then toss them into these customized tools. We see here also that we sort of considered the wiki as a tool. This was the report writing, as we've talked about in other sessions here, about having support for the analyst to write a report and communicate those findings. Again, the simple winding wiki gave us a lot of mileage in that regard. Additionally, the core of integrating the data was this semantic network component, which I'll talk about a little bit further. So for the grand challenge, as I mentioned, the mini challenges had very specific questions. They had very specific, or at least actionable questions. We could follow through the data. But if you look here at grand four, how do the major beliefs of the movement affect their activities? Well, seven. You know, it's a hard question to answer just using numerical approaches. So we're really getting a qualitative assessment based on the structured data in combination with the other unstructured or qualitatively assessed data. So it's interesting to see that the end, the beginning is a qualitative request, the middle part is this quantitative structure data, and then out back on the other side, we have to make some sort of qualitative assessment and draw everything back together. By using the mini challenges, there wasn't an obvious path to the grand challenge. You could complete the mini challenge or have a nice report and have a contained unit of analysis without having made that serendipitous discovery that, oh, this is how this data set relates to another one. So we sort of had to search around and think about how could we start integrating these ideas a little bit more formally than the conference calls and the traditional methods we had used through the wiki and the screen sharing for our periodic meetings. So the important link on this diagram is the one between the wiki and the semantic network. And here what happened is we just manually coded the ideas that had come up on the calls or the ideas that had been captured in the wiki into a network structure. And that was supported by transforms that we ran on the structured data that allowed us to relate the heterogeneous data sources into a single model. So by creating a single model baseline, we had something that we could then annotate and gave us the structure that we could build onto for these higher levels ideas, these hypotheses or the results of the analytical process where people were doing the discovery within the improvised tools. And you see here that if you take a full approach to all the data and you think about the unstructured data, particularly the main wiki page, not the edits but the actual substantial content, the real way to get at that was through a human analyst reading it and saying what they thought and how that interacted with what they had seen in the quantitative assessments and the improvised visualizations. Now, unfortunately, this particular component doesn't have the elegant visualization that we were able to apply in the mini challenges. Here I fell back to, as I mentioned before, a manual effort of coding the discoveries into the network and then simply using the PIEC network software, which is readily available to render the graph. So this is a standard output from PIEC, but the really interesting thing here is that we modeled the hypotheses directly against their supporting evidence, and this tended to be very powerful once we started to use it to look at an integrated approach. So for here, we see that there was a hypothesis about RFID tag 56. So it seemed to be a casualty. Sorry. Yeah, that's maybe not the largest for the people in the back of the room. So there was some thinking that this was potentially a suspect, potentially a casualty, maybe both, maybe neither. So in order to really get at what was the supporting evidence and how did it relate to the rest of the story, we modeled those concepts using this simple representation. And you see that we did some basic coloring, but I merely prefixed the nodes with the data set that they came from. And as in many other problems, you get a giant hairball of a mess of highly linked data. What allowed us to go further was then to apply the graph analytical techniques in terms of the higher level constructs being the hypothesis. So, for instance, we thought that there was a relationship between Catalano and Vidro based on content that we found in the textual wiki, the main wiki that was the natural language text rather than the wiki edits. And by searching for a path that connected these two people relative to the RFID tags, you can see that looking specifically at the RFID data set was insufficient. There was no path just in that case. And using the PIEC algorithms to find the most number of shortest paths, we were able to find this repetition where there were three attempts of people with these last surnames to cross via the Coast Guard data set. And by revealing this pattern, we could then start to make higher level assumptions regarding how the two data sets fit together and how everything flowed. So again, the thing I want to highlight is by focusing on the analyst-centric approach and then supporting that with discovery analytical tools that took advantage of the natural representations of the quantitative data, as well as the qualitative assessments that the humans could make on their own and simply write out in a discursive text, provided a lot of power. The main weakness was, of course, manually coding what that discursive report back into a numerical model and representing that. So thank you, and I guess we'll have questions later. So. Yeah.
Just to repeat, we'll have the questions and discussions after the three presenters.
Link here is, I guess.
Hi, my name is Lin Chan, and I'm a part of Oculus Info. So I'm going to begin with giving you an overview of the tools that we use for this year's FAST Challenge, which is GeoTime and N-Space 2. So GeoTime is a tool that provides the ability to track entity movements, show communications and relationships, and see behaviors in time and space. This is done within a single interactive 3D display and mapping entities and events over time and space. Time is in the vertical dimension on top of a geographical plane. The GeoTime Configurable Spaces extension analyzes events in any configurable context over time. Multiple types of diagrams can automatically be generated from evidence, and analysts can create tailored diagrams and use algorithms to optimize their diagrammatic expressions. N-Space 2 is an online tool designed to facilitate the steps of intelligence analysis process. It's designed to support and encourage multiple analysts to collaborate, and it consists of two main components. TRIST is the information triage tool. Some of the features include query planning, entity extraction, information comparison, trend analysis, information characterization and correlation. The sandbox is a place where you can make sense of your information that has been gathered. You can marshal and assess the evidence using features such as assertions, analytical competing hypotheses. You can create linked diagrams, timelines. You can also attach files and add images and georeference Google Maps straight into the sandbox. The projects page of the N-Space 2 is a hub for all the components. Multiple TRIST and sandboxes can be created and organized into folders. An analyst can drag their sandbox, their analysis, into a shared folder so that the other analyst can access the file to edit or gather information from previous analysis. For this year's challenge, we had two analysts assigned to work on the mini challenges. When they were done, they uploaded all the information to N-Space 2. And then a third analyst who did not work on the mini challenges gathered the information on N-Space 2 in order to make an analysis for the grand challenge. The three analysts got together, reviewed, and discussed the results together. For mini challenge one, we used GeoTime Configurable Spaces extension. And with the data provided by the Wiki edits page, we charted the edits made by each Wikipedia user over time in order to show whether they were for or against the Paraíso movement. On the left image, you can see that each edit is a point on the graph. The x-axis measures whether the edit was challenged, and the y-axis measures whether the comment was for or against the movement. The image on the right shows one of the factions that were generated from the data in GeoTime, and using the circular layout algorithm, you can see one of the factions that are occurring. For mini challenge 2, we also used GeoTime. The migrant records were imported into GeoTime using the GeoTime Excel plugin. Records were mapped as events in GeoTime as either interdictions or landing. The number of deaths was mapped to the quantity attribute of each event, and that's indicated by the size of each event. The blue represented the landing events, and the red represented the interdiction events. On the right, we reapply the colors in order to see which boat that they were using. For mini challenge 3, similarly, we used the configurable spaces extension. The callers for the cell phone network were arranged visually to display their social connections, the directionality of their calls, and the temporal patterns. The image on the left the map image was georeferenced directly and imported and georeferenced in the GeoTimes map cache, and each caller is represented by a different color. The solid line shows their movement, each caller's movement, and the dotted line shows the communications, the calls that made between the callers. Here in this top left image, you can see that the green line, that's where one of Tower 29, that's where one of the callers situated, is where everybody was moving to. So that indicated to us it was a meeting point for everyone. And when we make a diagram of the network, social network, using configurable spaces, the circular layout shows the organization of each network. Each network had a main caller, and each of these main callers were directly connected to caller number 200, who was the main guy. For mini challenge number 4, GeoTime was also used. We imported a plan, the floor plan of the Department of Health building, and overlaid the data above. By viewing the data in two dimensions and animating the events in time, Sorry, the video's not playing. Oh, here we go. So by animating the events and seeing the event in 2D, two dimension, we can see the people moving. And the sudden burst of movement indicates that the bomb just went off. So if we move the time slider that's moving at the bottom there to the last few seconds of the data, it indicates where the bomb set off, and we can use the ink features on GeoTime to note this area of interest. And we can zoom in into the area of interest, the image on the left, and analyze the events that occurred there. On the right, we can isolate the characters of interest and analyze where they were and what they did in temporal and spatial patterns. For the grand challenge, we used NSpace 2. And the work that was done by the initial two analysts on the 4 mini challenges made the work for the final analyst pretty straightforward. The third analyst was able to work off-site and log on to NSpace 2 using the internet. And through the shared folder, she can save all the existing analyses and put it to the pasteboard at the bottom of each of the sandbox. And then use that information according to the needs of the final challenge. For example, one of the sandboxes was made listing all the possibilities of how the challenges are connected. And assertions were made, hypotheses were made, and evidence taken from the previous analyses can be used to assess and proven to disprove the hypotheses. Uh, So what did we learn from this year's lesson? GeoTime was more effective for the data distributed by VAS Contest Committee this year because the data set contained more geospatial data. But capturing the results of the analysis was not as strong in GeoTime, so we used NSpace 2 to report on the findings. So we're currently working on the reporting aspects for GeoTime, such as implementing the ability to construct narratives and stories. For NSpace 2, the browser-based NSpace 2 is useful in the team-oriented analytical environment, especially when they are not in the same location. However, NSpace 2 works better with unstructured massive data. By having to transfer the data from GeoTime to NSpace 2, many aspects of the analysis required a manual layout, which has advantages but could be made more efficient. Automatic ways to extract social networks and work with geographical data are also currently under development for NSpace 2. So every year we enter the contest and the data set is never the same, which accurately mimics real life problems. Working through the data set allowed us to discuss and examine the limitations of our application, such as how we can better integrate our structured data analysis with the unstructured. Working with the data set gives us ideas of how to improve our system, and being able to discover the answer puzzle makes it all worthwhile. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Brian Lee. I'm a software engineer at Palantir Technologies. And first of all, I'd like to thank the VAS Committee and Vitell for putting on such a wonderful challenge. This is our first year of involvement. And as the other entrants know, it's a lot of fun. So thank you very much. So I'm going to start with a kind of short introduction to who we are and what the heck we do. What is Palantir? We embody a new approach to building contextually grounded visual analytics environments. We try to frame our systems in the language of the user with some deeper understanding of the target domain. We're a growing startup. We've got about 150 employees right now. We're actively hiring. Got to put that plug in here. We were actually born out of the anti-fraud division at PayPal. So interestingly enough, PayPal is actually not a payments company. In reality, they're an anti-fraud company. It's pretty easy to maintain a database with emails and balances and credit card transactions, but it's very hard to do that when the Russian mafia is defrauding you for $5 million a month. So when PayPal started, they had massive amounts of transaction data, but no easy way to identify suspicious activities. They developed internally these modeling and visualization tools, which integrated data from numerous sources and records, and freed analysts from having to work directly with data, but actually allowing them to interact more at a conceptual level. And the result of these cool tools is that fraud levels drop dramatically to the point where they're actually a victim of less fraud than traditional credit card companies. These founders asked themselves, hey, what else can we do with this approach? And this is where Palantir was born. And we're an enterprise software company. We develop software systems for real-world problems. Some of our seed funding came from Incutel, which is CIA's venture fund. And so we've been lucky enough to develop some intelligence and analyst tools directly in concert with the community. But in a nutshell, what we really do is we build platforms for human-driven analysis. This is probably preaching to the choir in this crowd, but I'm just going to blow through this here. We believe in turning hard user problems into hard software problems. So people should really be doing the creative stuff, forming hypotheses, solving puzzles, thinking, and dreaming. And machines should be doing the computational stuff, like extracting information, doing calculations, doing statistical analyses, and making the coffee. We believe in using everything available. There are technologies out there that do a lot of these things already. We've seen some beautiful visualizations around. There's database technologies, all sorts of stuff, but it's all out there and it's a heterogeneous mass. And one of our goals is to integrate these things into a cohesive, coherent system which allows analysts to get the work of analysis done. We try to frame as we said earlier, we've tried to frame things in the way that users think about it. Bring it down to level. Bring it down to the level of entities, as you heard Dr. Beer talk about earlier. Entities, people, places, things, rather than rows and columns in a database. And of course, we want to produce some, you know, fluid interfaces. We want to automate things that should be automatic. We want to simplify things that should be simpler and enhance tasks that enable new workflows that could not exist before without these technologies in a coherent system. We've applied these design principles in two domains thus far, government, which is basically intelligence analysis, and finance. For the VAST contest, we applied the government product, which you see a screenshot of here. This is a focus on intelligence analysis. In this system, nodes are objects in the system, and they represent real-world things, entities, people, places, things, events, phone calls, meetings, flights, incidents, and documents, which are sources of data. You can search and filter based on properties of these things, types, and relationships. And the types themselves are user-defined. So what do we mean by that? So in this system, the user metaphor is actually customizable based on the user context. So if you're Jack Bauer from CTU, you might be interested in people, organizations, meetings, locations, and bombs. If you're a regional VP of a large business, you might be more interested in products, meetings, the hiring and firing of competitive companies, and so on and so forth. And so the user model here is, we call this a dynamic ontology, and it's customizable based on the domain of the target use. Palantir offers several built-in visualizations of data, including the graph, which you see here, so basically a node link diagram, the browser, which allows you to view these items in depth, see their properties and relationships, the timeline, which has this, in this case counts of items that happened in a given slice of time, as shown here, the histogram, which gives you counts of items with the same properties, so these are things that, for instance, wiki edits with the same username, and GIS. In this case, for the competition, we actually use Google Earth, but subsequently, we've actually implemented our own GIS application into Palantir. One of the very cool things about Palantir is that we're actually an open data platform. So as people come up with their own cool visualizations, they actually can implement them and actually insert them into Palantir's application. So you can write custom visualizations for unique challenges as they come up. So in Palantir, we enable relational, spatial, temporal, geospatial, and social network analyses in one unified pattern across all manner of data sources, both unstructured and structured. I'm going to show a short video from, or I'm going to attempt to show a short video from one of the many challenges here. And let's see if this actually works. Okay, how about that? All right. Can we get audio from one? No, we can't. Plugged in. Okay, well, oh, sorry, I will try that. Excuse me. All right. Is it muted? Oh, yes, it is muted. Okay. Sorry, my apologies for the delay. And let's try that again. Yeah, it sounds off, but it should be on now.
Let's explore the hypothesis that Ferdinando Catalano is using ID 200. This graph is his first order calling network, quite small, and this is the second layer. Here we see a dense network separated into clear clicks. I'll refer to the pink nodes as the inner network and black nodes as the outer network. Interestingly, most call activity here effectively stops on Thursday the 8th, so let's try to figure out what's happening. One possibility is that the inner network switched communication devices on the 8th. We can explore this option by looking for other IDs in the dataset that demonstrate similar call patterns to the same network. So we can search for outer network communications that occurred after the suspicious drop in calling activity. And this is what we have here, communications to and from the black nodes between Thursday and Sunday. Now I'm going to pull out the most prolific callers using the histogram and reorient specifically on their phone calls to get rid of the noise. Again, we have a few well-defined clicks, and if we look closely here, there's only one new node in the middle that is connected to multiple click centers, and that is ID 300. Identifying this new network in pink, the similarity and overlap becomes clear. Finally, let's take a geotemporal look. On the timeline, we see spike in activity on Thursday the 8th, exactly what we would expect if the inner network picked up these new devices. Similarly, we would also expect the phone calls initiated by IDs 2 and 300 to come from the same geographical region of the island, so long as Ferdinando didn't switch locations. And again, this is precisely what we see in Google Earth. So it looks like we have found our culprits. Ferdinando Catalano, along with his inner network, switched phones on June 8th. They're now using new devices to communicate with the same outer network.
Okay, so it's worth noting that the tools that you saw there, the graph, the histogram, the browser, and the GIS tools, were the primary tools used to carry out the analyses for all the many challenges. The analysis itself is done primarily by an intern with the help of two of our forward deployed engineers. So yes, one thing that I'd like to know is that we kind of barely scratched the surface of what Palantir can actually do. VAST used a number of the tools, but there's all sorts of features. You might recognize some of them if you saw Dr. Beer talk earlier this morning, but all sorts of features that did not get mentioned or used in this particular analysis, but which Palantir actually implements. And so we note that integrating these technologies together enables a lot of powerful workflows, which have been significantly more difficult if you didn't have a system such as Palantir. I just want to briefly mention the other product that Palantir works on. It's Palantir Finance. And the big thing about Palantir Finance is that, again, we're providing high-level building blocks of finance concepts that people actually think about. We model the objects in the language of finance, equities, indices, groups, portfolios, strategies. And the user metaphor that we're using here is financial markets. So equities, stocks, bonds, futures, metrics such as correlation and volatility, and higher-level modeling such as strategies and market indicators. And the very cool thing about this product is that everything is pluggable. So everything's a building block. Anything can be used as an input, and output from visualizations and modeling can be used as input to another visualization or model. So we're building on this philosophy of being able to build on these things and share them without an analyst so that you get multiplicative power based on what other people are doing in your group. We're a real company. The Palantir government's operational at Intel Defense Law Enforcement Agencies. Palantir Finance is being deployed to financial institutions. And we're not sure where we're going next. There's a number of genres or domains that you could apply the ideas of object graphs and time series to. And lots of cool possibilities. So why do we think this is cool? I mean, why do we care? So my background is as a Stanford, I did my PhD and graduated just recently. And one of the cool things about this system, I think, is that it supports all aspects of analysis. So if you saw Dr. Beer's talk earlier, talked about issues such as data integration, entity-based knowledge management, search and discovery, visualization, collaboration. These are kind of things that we've integrated into Palantir as a platform. Not only that, as a HSI geek, one of the cool things about this, I believe, is interoperability. We know that Palantir exists in an ecology of tools. People have legacy tools that they want to use and support. They might have other tools. You've seen millions of great visualizations here at this conference, which you might want to use to visualize certain aspects of Palantir, data from Palantir. So the platform is open. You can take model, import stuff into our model, export it out to other tools, and do as you please with it. We're just here to give you a great platform for which to launch your own great analysis. And extensibility. So not only can you interoperate with other tools, but you can extend Palantir to do all these things inside Palantir itself. And so Palantir espouses a new approach to building powerful, contextually grounded tools, platforms for analysis. We're trying to understand domains and apply, and based on those understandings, and create new tools that extend those workflows. We're rapidly going startup. We're hiring. So if you're interested in working with people, it's very cool. And not only that, we're offering $5,000 referral bonuses. So if you know anyone that's looking to get a job, please talk to us. We'd love to talk to you. I've only briefly brushed over what we actually did for VAST, so if you're interested in what we're doing now with VAST or anything else, please see our websites or come talk to us. We have a booth over in the exhibit hall. Thank you very much.
We have a few, maybe
just the microphone thing.
No, no, go ahead.
All right, I'll come here then.
We have a few questions that we... No, that's a planted question section. And then we'll open to the whole group. So let's start, you know, I think we want each of you to answer very quickly, and then I'm sure there'll be a lot of overlap between the questions, so we'll come back. So the first question is, what was your motivation for entering? So we'll follow the same order?
I don't know about that.
And then we'll start by your order, and then you could...
Cool. All right, well, so NEVIC, or the Northeast Visualization Analytics Center, is one of the regional visualization analytics center. So there are a number of initiatives to support many aspects of visual analytics and visualization and geospatial data. So for us, this was a natural opportunity to finally sort of have a tool that was very, or a problem set that was very representative that we could test our tools on and really get a feel for how that would perform on such a complicated data set.
Well, every year we enter the contest and we get to enhance the aspects of our applications by working through the challenges, and we're always eager to test our new implementations. This year we're able to try out NSpace 2 and attempt to work in a collaborative manner from different locations, which is something that we didn't do last year. We also had the chance to use GeoTime more effectively on the data sets this year, and not to mention that everyone on the committee is very supportive and encouraging, and it's a very valuable experience.
So I think we had three general motivations for entering. One of them was to explore visualization in the product. So we've built these basic tools, but we know that they are only the kind of base level for, you know, what kind of visualizations you need to, for various scenarios. So it'd be interesting. It was interesting to test out how the basic tools in Palantir actually, you know, performed in tasks that the community has come up with. And another thing was to help us understand what we need to build out further. And the third was to actually get involved with the community. So we actually had, unlike some of the other folks here, we've never been to InfoVis before. It's our first time here. We're just interested in meeting a lot of smart people and see what's going on in the community.
Maybe I could add something maybe from the other people who are not here. Something we heard is that because the mini challenges were easier to get in, we got a lot of people that were just curious in getting in the field and have learned in the process of what visual analytics is, etc. So just, you might be wondering, you know, those folks have spent a fair amount of time or they have existing tool, but we also heard other people telling us that, oh, we met for a week at Starbucks after work with two people, and they spent 3 days developing and analyzing the data and 2 days preparing the answers. So just to give you the range of time that people spent, the grand challenge is obviously more work, but you can, it's accessible to people and teams that are just starting. So we have another question. Maybe let's group them together. If you want to tell us what was more challenging and most rewarding, you know, the two sides.
Okay, so I'll start with the rewarding aspect. So if you look at the proceedings, we have a two-page paper with 10 authors. So that's not typical of your two-page paper. But what that indicates is just the amount of collaboration. So it was very beneficial for me being in a collaborative relationship with another university and having the affiliations with the RVAC and NVAC, and also to have a problem that was really sophisticated enough that it made us rely on each other to keep moving the problem forward. And that really goes back to, you know, what's the most difficult aspect? And that was just the pain of getting stuck. As soon as you would follow the data, you would come up with new and better questions, but at a certain point you couldn't answer them with the small amount of data that we had. So that was the balance, I think, that they played on each other. We would get stuck, but then it was exciting when somebody else on the team came up with a new answer, and you would get stuck again.
Oh, and you're old friends still.
I guess so. It depends on how I do up here. So.
Collaboration, clearly.
Yeah,
no, for us it was collaboration too. Being able to find the connections was a rewarding aspect, and knowing that our software works with the real world data, it's really satisfying to see these applications in action. And it was exciting for me because I was a person who was not in the office, so when I needed something, I can just grab it off the internet. It made it really easy. And the difficult aspect was probably cross-referencing the different types of data formats from the mini challenges. We didn't have too much of a problem cross-referencing structured data, but cross-referencing the names from all the migration and the wiki edits were really painful.
So definitely, I think as Lynn just said, the really rewarding part was seeing how our visualizations and our software worked against real world data. I think that for us the most difficult, frustrating part or time consuming maybe was getting the data into the system. So data import's hard. You've got you have structured and unstructured stuff. You've got the wiki edits, which are, you have to figure out how to model the data and stuff. So I think that was actually the most challenging bit for us in this particular challenge.
Yeah, maybe it's interesting. I could add, you may not have followed it, so hidden in the details of the web pages, but as far as reward goes, we have the teams that received an award have the two page in the proceedings. The others have two pages in the compendium. But actually, this time we made it optional, so you didn't really have to provide a two-page summary. Some people don't care; some other it allows them to come, and it's very important. So we find a way to do that. The other part of the reward is being part of the teams that worked with the analysts. You saw the photos earlier that George showed you, and it's interesting. Like, so one of the great pleasure for us is to see the Oculus folks fight to get in this session. They all want to come, but we only allow three people, and they want to come. So and it's the third year they do it. So really, there is something that's telling us something. All right, so maybe the next question would be, can you share with us lessons learned during your work on the Grand Challenge and lessons learned?
Okay, so I think the key component that I spoke to in reflecting on how we achieved this was the value of individual ideas coming from people. And so within any given college, there's sort of a more heterogeneous environment where people are from the same discipline. And I think that we learned a lot in terms of seeing people from multiple disciplines come together with different viewpoints. So there were people at different points in their academic careers or their progression towards graduate study. And this helped at those points that I mentioned earlier where you got stuck. Because if we had too much groupthink going, or if everybody had the same perspective, we would have approached the problem and been even that more ingrained in our current line of thinking. So that helped a lot. And the other thing was a learning that I think you relearn every time you do a large project, which is you have to keep everything organized. So this seems to be a real opportunity. I know it's been said in almost all the other talks in terms of helping analysts report their findings and organize the data. It gave me a real appreciation for the thought stuff or the intangibles that people had in their head and trying to capture that particular element in addition to the pure quantitative analytical techniques that have been more classical.
I think I mentioned earlier in the presentation, we experienced some of the limitations of our software. We needed better reporting features on GeoTime. At the same time, NSpace 2 could have worked better with geospatial data. So we're working on implementing these features.
System improvements.
So I think we learned that the built-in visualizations that we have in Palantir were really fantastic at analyzing a lot of these scenarios in this particular challenge. One of the biggest challenges for using our mostly static visualizations was analyzing the evacuation scenario, which involved a lot of basically animation, moving over time. And so we saw a lot of terrific visualizations here. Personally, we really love the staining work, where they use stains to identify and then backtrace the participants in the evacuation. And so it would be interesting for us to think about, or at least for me as a computer science geek, to think about how we could generalize that. What principles could you take away from the visualizations that we saw here, the solutions we saw here, to solve that kind of general movement over time analysis, and how we could apply those in our product and in general?
Yeah, and I think just to talk about what other people have told us too, like it looks like everybody has learned something through the process of running through this challenge and working through the realistic problem, again, thanks to the creation of the wonderful data sets we have. And also that it's really done it nicely. This is a multidisciplinary team, teams and community, really. I mean, you could see from the papers that we have that people come from many, many different disciplines, and we still have to work together in a better way. So the next question is it worth it? So you could just go like this, or comments as you like.
Well,
not much.
Well, from the student standpoint, I've been very lucky to study under Drs. Chen and McEachran. So they've been part of the community, and I have more than enough to read, and I had the benefit of a visual analytics class. But still, there's just something about trying to work the problem that helps relate it back to reality. So even the mini challenges, I think I would recommend anybody just play with it. It's a fun set of data that sort of exposes a lot of problems that are not obvious just by reading the text.
I don't think I'm allowed to say no. But yes, it was. No, it was.
That's why I got up here. Just to
We'll talk later.
No, it was definitely worthwhile. It's always a lot of fun. We get to test our software. We get to push the limits. We keep trying to make sure that the data formats will be processed in our software, and watching the mini challenge connect together is very satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with her.
All right. All right. Well, go ahead.
Okay. So there are a lot of other questions we can ask, and I think we're actually getting close toward the end of time, right? This ends.
This part, no.
We have a lot of time. Good.
Yes, we have
okay.
a lot of time.
All right. So, okay. Above and beyond the questions learned in the Grand Challenge, were there additional lessons learned in the interactive session, the session Monday night?
Okay. So, yes.
And you can also answer the next question, you know, at the same time. What was the most difficult aspect related to that?
And enjoyable.
And enjoyable.
Just do the whole thing.
So
all right. I'll talk about the interactive session.
Okay,
so it's a nice sequence of questions because it sort of builds. I mentioned earlier I approached this sort of as a student, and I, you know, reading the basic theories, and it's the so-called analyst profession is something that a lot's written about, but it's difficult to get the exposure. So, in working with you know the analysts that we had the opportunity with earlier in the week. It was revealing that you know some of that stuff's true. Some of the theories do really play out, and if nothing else, they sort of armed me to understand or see what was going on from the right frame of mind to do something about it. And the approach, you know, if I'm going to answer all the questions, I don't
sure.
monopolize too much time, but we took the approach of operating the machinery and asking the analyst to use the think aloud, and we said. Please let us know what question you're currently thinking about. What are you exploring at the moment? And the real difficulty with that, what was the most difficult question, was just keeping up. It was just amazing how, no matter how fast and responsive our systems were to getting at more data or more evidence to support a particular question, there was always a follow-up question. And there was a balance there between how quickly and efficiently we could answer to what depth, but the breadth was unlimited. There was always something new to follow that up with, no matter how much information we provided.
Well, it's always important to learn our software from the user's perspective, and getting to work with an analyst who don't know the workarounds for what we have, and we were able to kind of learn, get insights, and add features to what we don't already have. I think the most difficult part is teaching an analyst how to work the software within half an hour. That was probably the most difficult part.
Okay, questions. Were there additional lessons? Yes. What was the most difficult aspect of the interactive session? So I think the most difficult and enjoyable aspect of the interactive session was working with a live analyst. I think that working with directly with analysts revealed to us how much we as designers slash users slash evangelists of the product kind of take for granted. Like, oh, this is so intuitive. And then you sit down with an actual analyst coming from his or her own mindset, his or her own domain, and trying to relate what you take for granted to what she takes for granted is often a very difficult task. That said, it was also the most enjoyable aspect. The feedback that our particular analyst gave us was fantastic. She pointed out she was able to, make a lot of trenchant observations about both about the task at hand and about the interface in general. And so, the lesson learned is that analysts are great. You should definitely talk to them.
And I'm adding a comment from an analyst actually who participated in the session from last year, but said I looked at hundreds of demos, commercial system and all. And this is the best way to really know what the system does. You have to work through a problem, and then you really understand if it's going to be helping you or not.
Okay. So notice we didn't phrase the last question as, would you tell a team to participate or not, but what would you tell them? Because we don't want to sort of push too hard. I do want to point out that even though you think of 73 submissions, I want to point out that there were close to 250 people who participated on this activity, and those were the submissions because they were teams. So even though the number 73 looks like it's high, there were over 200 people working on this activity. So this activity is very, as you can see, everyone is very excited about it. So it's a very novel, terrific way to approach our evaluations of future technologies and developing metrics, I hope, automated ones. So if a team contacts you, about participating, what would you say?
Okay, so at the risk of offending sort of the systems people, I would say get people. Get a wide group of people from different backgrounds, and then look at systems to support those people and integrate everything. Particularly somebody with some analyst frame for thinking. I would also recommend the summer camp program. I had an opportunity to attend that, and it was very embarrassing because as soon as I got there, which was right after the contest had ended, I realized how much I had done wrong. So if any of the teams have the opportunity to attend that's very valuable, particularly in many of the softer elements.
What? Yeah, somebody should describe what it is.
Oh, sorry.
The summer camp this last year, NVAC put on a 2-week summer camp. It was an experiential summer camp. And some of you helped. John Stasko brought his jigsaw system, and then Beth Petzler and some of her folks brought a real problem space for us to work on. We had 5 different tools with 5 different problem data sets. And we went through learning the tools, but also learning analytical methods. And we're now evaluating whether we should do that again next year. So,
looks like it.
But it was very intense. It was 10 days of very intense learning. We definitely heard that.
I hope you do it again. And I hope that anybody who's planning on entering gets at least somebody to head up there and represent the team. But
watch the NVAC webpage. That's where we'll be next.
It's a lot of fun to do this, and I would definitely tell people to join it. But from the other respect, we don't want more people to come. <'cause> that's competition. No, but it's definitely a lot of fun, and you learn a lot of experience. You get to come here, there's visibility. So, yes, come.
Remember, there was no winner.
That's right.
Just awards.
That's right. Everyone, yeah. I think putting on my former graduate student hat again, I'd probably say 3 pieces of advice for people considering this. The advice over there, fantastic. People are great. Competition's great, sort of. But one thing I'd do is, work against old data sets. So I believe that a lot of the data from previous years' competitions and or similar things are available, and it's a great way to kind of get acquainted with the types of problems you might be solving. The second is read. There's a fantastic amount of literature, and you know, for graduate students, maybe you're sick of reading, but the stuff that's been going on here is fantastic. They show you know, just an amazing amount of variety and ways to approach different problems. And my final piece of advice would be to, once you've read them, throw them away, because there's a ton of creative, I mean, we saw earlier just screenshots of the amazing creative variety of solutions that people came up with to solving these four simple problems. And, you know, they are kind of simple. And so, you know, reading background is great, but at the end, it's just like, just be creative and be yourself. So, thanks.
Great. So, thank you. And I think now we'll have you folks come up. And we just to point out, we have a couple slides about the future, what's going to happen next year and things like that. So we'll stop about 5 minutes before it ends and just go over that. Right now, come up and ask questions to any or all of the panelists.
Well, we can hear you. The room probably can't.
Wait, he's going to fix it.
No.
Just talk really loud.
You can just speak. I think
we can.
While he fixes it.
So
don't get too close to that.
Actually, where's the more portable?
That's all right.
Hello? Yes. So my name is Alex Harris from University of Maryland, and my question would be to the NEVA group. So I wonder. So I quote in your talking, you use some words like actionable, get out of their minds, externalizing ideas or tasks, and keeping everything organized and intangible. So these are very familiar for me, from a book called Getting Things Done of David Allen. Did you read that book or get influenced from there? And if yes, how much?
Yeah, I haven't read that specific book, but my particular college focuses on information science from my program, so I'm very much interested in the behavioral and sort of the social aspects of information flow and how people work with information. I think that heavily influenced the way I looked at the problem. So there's a lot of research in that book, or serendipitously down the hall now that ACEST has arrived. They would have the answers.
Okay. I had another one. So you used improvise, and how much effort did you make to the tools so that you can connect them to improvise?
Well, I worked at corporate America for a while, and effort's a very intangible answer. It depends on perspective, I think. Relatively little effort compared to if I had to pull up a Java 2D screen and implement all of the visualization widgets, and it distributed well over the team. Chris Weaver was on the team, and he's the creator of Improvise. So in terms of him driving the creation of the implementations, it was as fast as it could possibly be. So I think little effort relative to anything else.
Yeah, I was trying to understand whether another person not being a developer of improvise, could it be possibly usable for them, like for me or something? Would you recommend, or maybe?
Yeah, Chris has put it up on the internet, and it is accessible. But what I'm going to do is refer you to the last talk today, where Chris will be here presenting some of his work, including improvise. So,
okay, thanks.
I'm Don Jones, Booz Allen Hamilton, representing Defense Intelligence Agency. One of the things that we have that we look at when we evaluate software that comes in is what we call time on task. And what that means is we have broken it down into four tasks. One is training, one is data ingest, one is analytics, and one is presentation of the results. And that's kind of a general comment for the next year's task or things, if you can want to put in some categories of how much time individuals or teams spend on those particular categories. My big question to all of you is, and how much time did you spend, man hours, we can probably talk about that, to preparing and doing the task at hand? And one of the things that we're very interested in is, yes, we are interested in accuracy, but we're also time to solution. So how fast did it get us to the solution? And that's how we do a lot of our evaluations of our software.
I'm always speaking first.
Anyone wants
to. Give somebody an opportunity.
I actually don't have a good estimate of how many man hours you spent, because the team members worked on an individual basis at some point, so it was not like we logged hours we spent doing together. That said, your point about the four stages of analysis is well taken, and I think that there are certainly elements of presentation, for instance, which are underestimated as a factor in visual analytics. And so, I don't have a good answer for you in terms of your actual question, but I think that you made fantastic points, and thank you for coming.
I think for us, it was over a span of maybe four weeks, but perhaps the last two weeks was spent mostly. I think two of us worked full-time hours working on the data set. And processing the data was probably done just a little bit before then.
Approximately 200 man hours or so.
Yeah, we didn't log hours as well. Yeah.
We didn't log hours. I mean, weren't
students very seldom ever do. So.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for the overall man hours, and while it would be nice to maybe record that in future entries, I think it would be a difficult thing to do based on the way the organization is done. Having said that, I'd also like to address the evaluation framework of time on task. And this is from a reflection during the analyst session earlier in the week, where, as I said, what we did is we organized we would be called the technical people. We were sitting in front operating the machinery with an analyst behind us relating what their questions were. Now, based on that evaluation criteria, we didn't contribute anything. It was purely the analyst that would be evaluated and said, this is time on task. But I'm reluctant to believe that we weren't making a contribution in that environment. So there's a lot of code that might be developed, thrown away, or prototyped that in a classical business widget making kind of manufacturing, you would say doesn't contribute to the bottom line. But when your main product is thought stuff, I think that any particular avenue you pursue where you're exploring the problem, even if it does lead to a dead end or a prototype that gets thrown out, should in some way contribute to what your final frame of thinking is going to be. And in terms of quantifying that, unfortunately, although I'm making a bit of a criticism, I don't have an evaluation framework to propose to address that. I think that's a great opportunity for future research work.
And also for the reporting aspect, quantifying that is a little bit hard too, because we have to adhere to a format that's being given to us. We have to make a video, and it's not really a part of a norm. I don't know if it's really a part of an analyst's tasks. Yeah. So quantifying that is a little bit difficult too.
So
I just feel like repeating that there were really a wide range of amount of time spent on those submissions, that some people spent very little and still were able to do a fairly good job on mini challenges. Some people spend a lot of time, but that's because they created a new tool from scratch. And really, it's a, we are trying to find, to move between that line of trying to compare comparable things and then at the same time allow creativity and allow people to learn about this process and create new tools. So it's
Okay. So I think we should thank the three challenge participants here and panel members. And we'll move on to just a couple more slides about the data sets in the future. The 2008 data sets and questions are available to all. They're on the website, and we're going to be very nice. If you submit your answers, we'll give you the solution for all those others who may want to participate or something. The interactive session data sets and questions, that was the smaller problem, is available only to instructors for training, for class projects, and there are some exceptions. If you have a reason, please contact us. We are flexible. We're trying to figure out what is a real good way, and there may be many approaches. Maybe we release and maybe we don't. If you have ideas, let us know. That's the evolution of this challenge activity. The 2006 and 7 data sets are also available. You can download them. If you don't know where, just start off at the challenge, you know, the download the data set, and it leads you pretty easily through all the links. And solutions and videos are given to instructors. The 2009 challenge, the best slide for the end, you know, so probably a very similar format. Notice every one of my words is going to have, every one of my sentences is going to have probably. Probably you should practice using previous data sets if you want to enter. The deadlines for submission is probably around June, July. We're trying to push earlier for lots of people, but some people have problems if it's earlier, so it's a balance. Who knows? Maybe we'll do, never mind. Target data set delivery, again, is spring, maybe March. And if you have any suggestions, questions, this is really a collaborative community activity, and we're sort of providing a base set of activities. It's not just fun for the people who enter. We really do have fun, even though we work very, very hard. So send us an email, and there's a couple people that are going to have things to add. So, Gene? Right, there is a survey form that you've been given. If you don't have, pick one up again. That survey form is, do you have a data set? Do you have suggestions for areas that you would like data sets to be developed? Do you have ideas? I don't think we put on, do you have ideas for metrics or evaluation? But please, if you do, automated metrics and evaluations, help us. Yes.
Yeah. And then the box to drop them is at registration.
Okay, that's it. Any other questions before we end here? Yes. Could you go to the mic so everyone can hear? Thank you. Probably yes. I think I would be, but if I'm overwhelmed or we're overwhelmed, I think we have to figure out another way. But if people provide new solutions, we definitely are interested.
Right, and we will post them as well so that you get,
yes,
you know, you are known for having looked at the different solutions.
I mean, in some, I'm sorry.
No, I mean, well, one thing that wasn't mentioned is that all the answers that the participant provided will be posted on the NIST website. And
right,
we'll
and
send
then
advertisement for that.
Right, and then one idea might be to do something like Many Eyes, where people could comment and make suggestions in the future. That would be a very good idea too.
Possibly.
Yeah, right. Possibly. Okay, thanks, folks.
Thank you.